I'd like to open an organizational meeting for the purpose of adopting committee rules and introductions of committee members. Vice Chair Hovey, would you like to make a motion?
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the proposed committee rules dated February 3rd, 2014.
Vice Chair Hovey moves to adopt the proposed committee rules dated February 3rd, 2014. Is there any discussion? Any objections? No objections. Motion passes. Rules are adopted. Would like to have the committee members introduce themselves, starting over in the right-hand corner and moving to the left.
Okay.
Representative Kenemer.
Bill Kenemer from Canby.
Chris Harker from Beaverton, Cedar Hills area, District 34.
Bob Denson from Pendleton, House District 58. Everything from Pendleton East to the Snake River and Hell's Canyon.
Paul Holvey, State Representative from District 8, which is South Eugene and Lorraine, Notai, Elmira, Elvador.
Elmira. It makes you feel like singing.
Val Hoyle, Representative from House District 14, West Eugene and Junction City, and no longer Alvador.
Wally Hicks, House District 3, Grants Pass.
Phil Barnhart, House District 11,
Central Lane and Lynn Counties.
Vicki Berger, House District 20, Salem, South Salem, West Salem, and the communities of Monmouth and Independence.
Barbara Smith Warner, House District 45, Northeast Portland, Maywood Park, and Park Rose.
All right. Thank you and welcome. With that, I'm going to close the organizational meeting and open a public hearing on HCR 202. I would like to call up Representative Chris Gorsuch and Multnomah County Sheriff Dan Staton for public testimony. Representative Gorsuch.
Good afternoon, and it's a pleasure to be here. You were going to sing a song, is that right?
Yeah. It would have been a
good song. It would have been fun.
At any rate, we are here to discuss HCR 202.
Representative, could you identify yourself?
Oh, yes, that would be a good idea. Representative Chris Gorsuch, District 49, East Multnomah County. So myself and Sheriff Staton are here to talk to you about HCR 202. So, again, good afternoon, Chair Hoyle and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Chris Gorsuch, representative for District 49. I'm here today to speak in support of HCR 202, and it recognizes and honors Reserve Sergeant Scott Collins and Reserve Deputy Mark Whitehead for their service to the state. This resolution would authorize placement of a roadside memorial sign to commemorate the ultimate sacrifice of two Multnomah County Sheriff's deputies who were killed in the line of duty. On February 26, 1993, Reserve Sergeant Scott Collins and Reserve Deputy Mark Whitehead were in a marked patrol vehicle traveling eastbound on I-84 near what is now the Fairview Parkway overpass. A driver on the inside lane of I-84 westbound lost control of his vehicle, hit the grass median strip, and flew into the eastbound lanes. The undercarriage of his vehicle sheared off the top of the patrol vehicle, killing both reserve deputies. The driver of the first the vehicle that flew into the air had a blood alcohol content at the time of over 0.2. I'm happy to be the chief sponsor of this bill because I feel it is important that we honor our public safety officers who have made the ultimate sacrifice. Their deaths are commemorated at the Police Officer Memorial in Washington, D.C., and also at the Oregon Public Safety Academy here in Salem. As a former police officer with members of my family currently involved in law enforcement, I'm fully aware of the risks and responsibilities these fine men faced every day they were on the road. I believe it's extremely important that these officers have a place in their community which recognizes their sacrifice. It should also be pointed out that these were highly trained individuals, but they were volunteers. They were not paid officers, very much like the deputy, I believe it was a deputy in Oregon City recently who was killed. They took time away from their private lives to be available to assist police and other rescue workers. They performed their duties and received no monetary compensation. It is tragic that the deputies' lives were taken by someone who chose to break the law and drive with a blood alcohol level much higher than the legal limit. And it is my hope that as people travel along I-84, they will pause a moment to remember these brave individuals. Thank you.
Thank you, Sheriff Staton.
Good afternoon, Representative Hoyle, Representative Hicks, Commission. I'm here on behalf of the Multnomah County Sheriff's Office. I'm here on behalf of the family, and I'm here on behalf of a lot of the citizens in Multnomah County. Oh, excuse me, I apologize. My name is Daniel Staton. I'm the Sheriff of Multnomah County. Getting back to the citizens have shown concern about this. Our office has had concern about these members that have lost their lives. It's been nearly 20 years. It'll be 20 years the 26th of this month, and we've honored them every year. They've been honored at the National Capitol, and we'd like to establish this memorial. I worked that night when they lost their lives. I was on the call when they lost their lives. When I arrived on scene, it was the most horrific accident I'd ever seen in my entire career. And I've been with the Sheriff's Office now 25 years. You couldn't tell that the vehicles that were involved, that the one was even a patrol car when we arrived on scene. We were unable to recognize these deputies. I was set on a perimeter. It impacted every law enforcement agency that surrounded us. The Portland Police Bureau was spotted, the Gresham Police Department, Troutdale PD, Fairview PD. We were all on scene trying to make heads or tails as to what actually happened. This was a very dark stretch of the road at the time. The median, there was no median in place. The car actually launched and went over the hood of the car, taking off the entire front from the windshield up. And this has had a significant impact on a lot of us, on a lot of our members. And I would ask that you approve this memorial. The Sheriff's Office Association has established the funding for the memorial, so there would be no cost to the state. But we would need the approval of the state to establish this memorial on the accident site. And we've coordinated this effort with ODOT at this point, and now it's up to your decision to approve this. And I hope you'll take this into consideration. Thank you.
Sheriff Staton, first, thank you for your service and for sharing that story. And with that, I would ask us if there's any additional testimony, and thank you for sharing. And is there anyone else that would like to testify on this bill? Okay. That will close the public hearing on HCR 202 and open a work session on HCR 202.
Madam Chair, I move HCR 202 to the floor with a B adopted recommendation.
Vice Chair Holvey moves HCR 202 to the floor with a B adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Ms. Madam Chair?
Yes.
The only question, of course, is what took us so long? And you don't have to answer, it's rhetorical. Certainly, we should honor these volunteers. I'm sorry we're so late in doing so.
Great. Any other discussion? Okay, any objection? All right. If not, the motion passes and HCR 202 is adopted. Representative Gorsuch, would you carry this on the floor?
Yes.
All right. Thank you very much. Okay. I'll close the work session on HCR 202 and open a public hearing on House Bill 4056, and a gavel. Okay, and with that, I'd like to call up Alan Colon. Colleen?
Colon, you got it.
Okay, good. And Rob Bovet.
I'll call
And members of the committee, House Bill 4056 prohibits county clerk or county recording officer from recording document that records death filed in conjunction with owning or having interest in land if document originated in this state and includes medical information related to cause of death. There is an emergency clause on this measure. There is no revenue impact, no fiscal impact on the measure.
Chair Hoyle, Vice Chair Holvey, members of the committee, my name is Rob Bovet. I'm legal counsel for the Association of Oregon Counties and policy manager for the Oregon Association of County Clerks. You may recall you heard the draft of this bill during your interim committee hearings, joint committee hearings in January. And briefly, and I'll keep it very brief, as part of omnibus comprehensive 2013 legislation modernizing vital statistics laws based on the Model Act, the State Model Act, one of the things that occurred within that act was a prohibition telling county clerks they cannot record death certificates that have health information contained on the death certificate. That's fine for death certificates issued in the state of Oregon because we have both a long form that includes that information and a short form that doesn't. But many states, including states like California and Washington, don't have that. They only have a long form. This leaves families in a real lurch because they can't record a long-form certificate with our county clerks and therefore clear and pass title once their family member dies. With me here today is Alan Colon. He'll give you a real-life example of how this has already occurred from a death certificate for his father out of California, and then also Val Unger, the Polk County clerk, who can answer any questions you might have. But at this point, I'll stop and I'll turn it over to Mr. Colon.
Okay, thank you. My name is Alan Colon. I'm third-generation Oregonian, so I've been around for a while. I think everybody's got a copy of some documents that I had submitted. The first should be a copy of an email that I sent to Ms. Berger, and several of you probably got the same email last week, kind of summarizing the situation. Bottom line, my parents were vacationing in Palm Springs. My dad has a heart attack and dies in Palm Springs. Then in 2012, my mom passes away. Basically, I've been trying to clean up the estate and get things closed. A week ago, I went to Tillamook County because they own property in Tillamook County and presented the death certificate, which is also an exhibit that you've got. As we know, they don't, they're prohibited from filing a death certificate if it has a cause of death, which I'd like to have an hour conversation on why that is, but this isn't the place, I suppose. And the reality is I called Riverside County that issued a death certificate. They refused to reissue a death certificate in a short form, so therefore I'm basically in a position where I've got a piece of property that needs to be transferred to get it out of my parents' name. At this point, I can't do that, so therefore it can't be sold, it can't be developed, I cannot borrow money against it. It's in a horrific state that leaves not only myself but the rest of my family in a position to where we cannot get closure on the estate. So that's where I'm at. I guess I'm asking that, and I know this is a passage for an emergency type hearing to expedite it. The only thing that I can share that would help us get closure on it more quickly is some counties have chosen to honor, I even made notes so I don't forget, an administrative ruling that states that for whatever reason they can actually record that. Tillamook County obviously is not. I went as far as the legal counsel in Tillamook County who told me, no, it can't be recorded. So that's the real life scenario. And I think I probably represent hundreds if not thousands of people that would probably be sitting here if they could get to Salem at 3 o'clock in the afternoon type of thing. So I think it's a bigger issue. As time goes on, it's going to do nothing but escalate. So thank you for letting me speak.
Well, thank you for coming here today. Ms. Unger, did you want just questions or did you want to speak to the bill?
I really don't have anything to add, but I am here to answer any questions that you might have from a standpoint.
Any questions from the committee?
Comments? Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Colum contacted my office, and I think if there is a purpose to short sessions, this is one of them.
to solve real problems for real people that are inadvertent sometimes when we write comprehensive changes. So I am appreciative that this is coming forward. I hope it is expedited quickly for the sake of Mr. Coleman and all the families like him, and the poor clerks who were left facing down the angry people who are trying to get it, their work done.
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you. I just wanted to, I noticed that legislative counsel is in the back of the room. I wonder if we're going to hear from LC about this.
No, no, that's on the next bill.
It's on the next bill. The bill looks very simple. I just want to make sure, having messed up this area before, whatever its change was that we did, that we are not doing it again. And if we're satisfied that that's the case, I would certainly support the bill. The idea that you can't get there from here mm-hmm. is not acceptable.
Representative Hicks.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so line 10 references filed in conjunction with owning or having a claim or interest in land, and then it ends there. And so is this going to cover enough eventualities? Because it just ends at a claim or interest in land. Is there any other way that this could be a problem for somebody else who's got a different kind of issue?
Madam Chair, Representative Hicks, I don't think so, because the issue is what's being recorded in the deed records.
Okay.
And so this is focused in surgically on what we can't right now record in the deed records, which by law we can't record the long-form death certificate, and this would remedy that problem specifically.
Well, is there a need to record a death certificate for any other purpose?
Chair Hoyle, Representative Hicks, there might very well be, but this law prohibits the clerk from recording the long form in the deed records. I'm not aware that this law causes any other problems with death certificates. It causes this specific problem.
Representative.
Well, to follow up with what Representative Hicks has brought up, I assume that having an interest in real property, which includes the house and everything else, not just the land. I don't know. I think there's just a, I guess you can't have a house without land, but I'm just curious how it covers real property.
And Chair Hoyle and Representative Holvey, actually you can have a house without land,
right.
And that can be real property.
Right.
The language used in the bill is the language used in our recording statute, so it all mirrors.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not wanting to use a different phraseology or a different definition than we currently use. So if we tightened the language, we might find that we couldn't record it. If we broadened it, it wouldn't match with the existing language. So we are satisfied,
okay.
And we did run it through legislative council. I didn't craft it, that this is a precision fix to the precision problem created by the comprehensive omnibus bill last year.
Any other questions or comments? Representative Barnhart.
I want to restate the last statement to make certain I understand it. If it's not an interest in land, it wasn't covered by the statute in the first place, and therefore a death certificate which did contain medical information would have been recordable for in conjunction with an interest that did not include land, if that were an appropriate use of the deed records.
Chair Hoyle and Representative Barnhart, ditto to the second part of your statement, because there would be no purpose in recording the death certificate.
Vice Chair
Hicks. If I may, someone's got to record when voters pass away. I don't know that a death certificate is necessary for that, but maybe that's not the best example. What we're trying to get at is we don't want to be here again next year looking at somebody else's.
Yeah, and Representative Hoyle, Representative Hicks, this is a problem with the deed records. So there may be a million different reasons to record, file, whatever, a death certificate for all kinds of other purposes.
Okay.
But the problem created by the 2013 omnibus legislation was specific to prohibiting the clerks from recording this in the deed records.
Okay, thank you.
So that's the problem.
Got it.
I'm sorry to belabor this, Madam Chair. I just want to make sure we get it right. As I understand it, if I have built a house on a piece of property upon which I have a long-term lease, the house is real property. I do not own the land. So if I died and the record, the death certificate included medical information, this could still be recorded in the deed records because it did not transfer an interest in land. Have I got that right or not?
Chair Hoyle, Representative Barnhart, a long-term lease, such as what we have in Salishan, for example, in my home county, is in fact an interest in real property. It is a transferable interest in real property, a 99-year lease, for example. A life estate is an interest in real property.
Ah, an interest in land.
Exactly.
Thank you. That does clarify. Thank you, Madam Chair. I now get it. I didn't before.
Everybody, any other questions, comments, concerns? Yes, sir.
And this is a little bit separate from this from the standpoint. Am I to understand that in Oregon that the person can be issued a long-form death certificate and a short-form death certificate?
Chair Hoyle, and yes. And so we're a state that is actually fully up to speed on the Model Act. And so they can issue both, and the short form is the one that's recordable. And the problem you ran in with your father is California only issues a long form, which is why you're stuck.
And the issue, as I understand it, is because when the cause of death is listed, that's a HIPAA violation because you're sharing private health information.
For a deceased person. Right.
But again, you know, right. Some people don't want that shared in a public record. Yeah. With that, if there's no other comments, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 4056, open up a work session on House Bill 4056. Vice Chair Holvey.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 4056 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Holvey moves House Bill 4056 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? There any objection? No objection. If not, this motion passes, and House Bill 4056 is passed. And Representative Wisnett will be the carrier. Okay, with that, I'll open a public hearing I'm closing the work session on House Bill 4056, opening a public hearing on House Bill 4133, LC and DOJ drafting, and we'll call up Dexter Johnson and Steve Wolf for testimony.
Okay.
You start first and introduce yourself, please.
Yeah. Chair Hoyle, members, good afternoon. Dexter Johnson, Legislative Council. And I'm here to talk about House Bill 4133. It is a fairly straightforward bill that directs the Office of Legislative Council and the Department of Justice to work together to identify and address laws that are outdated, obsolete, or duplicative of other laws, and to do that by preparing a draft legislation and an accompanying report that describes the problems and the Department of Justice would then introduce that, and at that point it would be before you to then either reject or move forward with the proposal as you see fit. And what this does in reality, of course, existing procedures are in place so that whether it's the Department of Justice or anyone else can ask Legislative Council to prepare amendments, you all can do that too, or to prepare measures to fix laws that are, in someone's opinion, obsolete or outdated or unconstitutional. Anyways, what this bill does, however, really is to fill a gap in those existing processes where right now there's if the laws that needs to be corrected is such a minor correction, there's every long regular session there's a bill prepared called the Revisers Bill. In 2013 it was House Bill 2148. Where Legislative Council fixes whatever the problem is, and it's considered historically by the House and Senate Judiciary Committees. It's very non-controversial, and whatever tweaks are needed are made in that bill, and it passes and becomes law. Alternatively, if there is an area of the law where there is a need for a kind of wholesale revision, revamping because it's not working right, it's obsolete, perhaps there are constitutional problems, and it's complicated. And there is not a natural constituency for fixing the law. There's the Oregon Law Commission, and they take a much more holistic look at whatever the problem is and develop proposals and bring those forward to you. And we serve as staff to the Oregon Law Commission, and so many of these kind of revision work efforts are come to you through the Law Commission. So where, however, there it's not such a big problem to warrant the Law Commission's attention, but it's too complex to be appropriate for the revisor's bill, there's a gap. And this bill attempts to put in place a process for addressing that gap with those laws of the 36,000 some ORS sections that are out there that are, in someone's view, obsolete or that there is a constitutional problem for which the Oregon Supreme Court or the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals at the federal level or the U.S. Supreme Court has determined with finality is unconstitutional or contrary to federal law. So with that gap, this bill is designed to put in place a process for getting those proposals before the legislature so that then they can be addressed or not. And that kind of is, well, there's one other thing before I turn things over to Steve. There's one other aspect of the bill that I want to highlight. There have been previous endeavors that the legislature has undertaken for this kind of housekeeping, and they have, for one reason or another, not been successful. And the reason typically is because these kinds of bills require a broad relating clause in order to work, and they become, as a result, vehicles for a lot of other proposals that can't necessarily stand on their own. And so what has happened in the past is that, in fact, those proposals have kind of brought down the measures that were designed to address whatever the specific problem was. Section 2 of this bill attempts to limit that by providing that only those sections identified in the accompanying report can be included in one of these cleanup bills. Now, I want to highlight that, of course, the legislature can always not withstand that. So it is not a truly effective limit, but it is something that takes a little step towards protecting these bills from other bills. So with that, I'd either be happy to answer any questions or turn things over to Steve.
Mr. Wolf, do you have anything to add to that?
Chair Hoyle, members of the committee, my name is Stephen Wolf. I'm the Chief Counsel of the General Counsel Division of the Department of Justice. And I don't really have much to add to what Dexter said. I am here to respond to any questions any member of the committee might have with regard to the department's role in this. But I am say that I'm very happy and eager to have the opportunity to partner with our counterparts in legislative council to work on this project. I think what we envision it as is really an exercise more in brush clearing. You know, our hope would be we would be identifying things that weren't terribly controversial to be removed from the ORS and things that we could explain pretty clearly and straightforwardly why they no longer need to be there.
All right. Any questions or comments from the committee? Okay. Vice Chair Hicks, and then we'll work our way down.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Prior to, I think it was 2013, I asked informally the Department of Justice to do something very similar to this, and the answer that I got back, I asked through the legislative channel, was if they could, the experts in the fields could be consulted and could identify laws that basically met this type of description. And the answer I got back was that nobody really knows what they are because they don't use them anymore. And so even the experts in the field came back, and granted, there wasn't a bill involved here, and there wasn't, you know, money attached to it or anything like that, but I was just looking for some guidance, and so I'd be interested in the mechanics of how you're actually going to find these laws on the books. How are you going to do this job?
Chair Hoyle, Representative Hicks, I think that our approach is going to be, and Mr. Johnson can correct me if I'm at least misstating his understanding, but that what we hope to do is not to do in each biennium a comprehensive review of the entire ORS, but to take just sort of bite-sized chunks of the, you know, manageable segments, and to be able to do a review. First, I think, just in partnership with Legislative Council, identifying those things, working together, that look like they might be candidates for this, and then doing whatever consultation might be appropriate to assess, yes, these actually are things that practitioners in the field don't rely on, that don't have, that either have been superannuated, have been declared unconstitutional, and to make sure that we aren't proposing something that is actually going to have an unanticipated substantive impact or ripple effect on the law.
One follow-up, and then, so like in the criminal code, the classic example that comes to mind for me is selling drugged horse, which is oddly enough a crime in the state of Oregon, last I checked. Yeah. Selling a drugged horse. Mm. And so on the surface, that sounds perhaps outdated, obsolete, or duplicative, because you could go a couple of different directions with that. But so you encounter selling drugged horse in the criminal code. It's like a B misdemeanor or something, from what I think I recall. I mean, does that qualify under the bill? Is that something you would propose for repeal?
Well, Chair Hoyle, Representative Hicks, that's something we would have to look at, because I think that even though it seems, at least to those of us in the Valley, as something that maybe is not something terribly germane, it may be something that does come up at least occasionally or serve as a deterrent to a particular kind of conduct. The fact that nobody's may not be violating the statute doesn't necessarily mean that it's not having a deterrent effect on a behavior in a segment of commerce or of the state that we might not be familiar with. So we have to look at that very carefully before making the assessment that no, this serves no purpose. It's something that may very well have a practical impact somewhere in the state.
Thank you.
And if I could just add, Chair Hoyle and Representative Hicks, I agree completely with Mr. Wolf about this process, but also this only gets us to the point of having a measure before you, along with an accompanying report that explains in kind of ordinary language what it is we think the problem is. And this process is, as you all know, very public and often has the effect of bringing people forward who say, well, let's put the brakes on. This, in fact, is something that is...
And I have one final question, and our administrative, statutory laws is what's referenced in line 5, so are administrative rules wrapped up into this?
Chair Hoyle, Representative Hicks, no.
Okay.
Administrative rules are, the legislature actually constitutionally cannot directly modify administrative rules. They can do so only by statutory change.
Thank you.
All right, Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm assuming that the point of this bill, as it relates to Section 1 sub C, line 9, 10, and 11, is not to include in this category issues that are under active review. Supreme Court of Oregon has said it's unconstitutional. The case has gone to the U.S. Supreme Court or might be going there, even from some other state. You wouldn't at that point assume that that statute comes under this review until it's finally resolved at this U.S. Supreme Court level, or until it's clear that it isn't going to be.
Chair Hoyle, Representative Barnhart. Yes, I'd like to actually point you to paragraph 5 of the bill, which expressly says that there must be a finality to the appeal. And also, I'd like to echo Mr. Wolf's comments that we envision this as not to address the most controversial things by any means, but actually those that are not controversial at all.
Thank you. You anticipated me with subsection 5, and I hadn't gotten that far. I did, however, get to the next question I want to ask, if I may, Madam Chair.
Yes.
So this work is all going to be completed by January 2nd, 2018. Is that correct?
Chair Hoyle, Representative Barnhart, that is the way the bill is drafted, but I think there's it's kind of envisioned that this is a pilot program.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Berger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a couple of questions. As you know, Mr. Legislative Counsel, every time you hold up a revisor's bill or one becomes before me, the question that I always ask on the record is, are you absolutely sure, Mr. Counsel, that there are no policy changes within that bill? And I am assured that it is, and then I vote for it. What you're proposing here would have policy implications as it comes here. Am I correct in that? Which, quite frankly, scares me a little, because what I envision is something as big as a revisor's bill that has policy in it, and you know how little time we have to delve into this. And so I'm a little cautious here in exactly what is going to be coming forward, and whether it comes from you or the Justice Department matters to me. And I'm not, talk a little bit about how you're going to work together. And my third question, and I'm throwing them all out here so you can react to all of them, is there's staff time in this. Who is assuming that, and is there any discussion of, like, how much time is going to be involved in this, and whether it's going to take from, say, your workload, Mr. Counsel, or your, you know, the folks in our place, or... These are all the questions that are winging their way through my mind.
Chair Hoyle, Representative Berger, taking kind of the last question first, because the money issue is always one of acute interest to us all. Actually, it sort of ties together through the thread of your questions, because I think what we are anticipating is, at least in this first biennial look at it, trying to figure out a way of absorbing it within our existing staffing and budget. That means it's probably going to be fairly limited in scope in order to make that happen, which means also that the bill that comes before the legislature should be fairly narrow with regard to the ground that it covers. And it will be accompanied by the report that we will be preparing jointly to explain why we think that these do not have underlying or at least unanticipatable policy ramifications. I agree wholeheartedly that's a very important part of this, and that in order to advance what I think our purpose is with this and our hopes are, it is not, again, to change policy. It is to just sort of clear deadwood, and if we find that we're encroaching too much on policy, I think that would be problematic for us and for you, and we certainly don't. It's sort of beyond the mission statement that we're looking at with regard to this legislation.
Representative Berger.
Yeah, thank you for that discussion, because I want that clearly on the record. That's really was the purpose of the question, because I really applaud that all of us who have worked with the ORS understand there is dead wood in there, but when you go to carve it out, you better be very, very careful. I'm always afraid, quite frankly, of revisor's bills. and so you're going a step beyond it, and I appreciate that the accompanying report, and we will carefully dip our, I think I'll support this and dip our toes in these waters and just be very careful that we get where we want to go without trying to revise huge sections. I mean, I've worked with the Oregon Law Commission. I know how they work, and I know how to get a big, complicated area of law to interact and articulate and work together, and that is not the vision we have here. The vision here is to find those places where the courts have said maybe our laws are no longer usable and get those cleaned up, and thank you for that.
Well, Chair Hoyle, Representative Berger, I just want to say that that's partly, I think, what we're trying to do here is address some of the problems that may have frustrated earlier efforts that, Representative Hicks alluded to do this, where we didn't really have a mechanism in place to review these things carefully, to come to that guidance in terms of how to present the bills and clean up and identify them. And I think that this legislation goes a long way toward achieving those ends.
If I could just add to that one point, which is, again, just to emphasize that I think both the Department of Justice and Legislative Council know that this is a pilot program and are very interested in being cautious in this. And we will tread carefully.
Representative Jensen. Okay. Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I really commend the work that you're proposing here, and I know it needs to be done, and because we do run into problems when we're drafting bills. I imagine Legislative Council, some of the drafters probably have a long list of things that could be addressed that they run into. But I'm kind of curious or a little bit amused by Section 2 of the bill. And, you know, I know you're Legislative Council. I'm just trying to figure out how that's constitutional, that you're forbidding the Legislative Assembly from doing something in this bill. And it seems like you'd be able to get the presiding officers to control the bill a little bit so you don't have that problem, as opposed to putting that sort of a mandate on the Legislative Assembly. I'm sort of curious how you... I mean, I can appreciate your frustration of having a bill amended to, you know, and then it dies because of that amendment. I've watched that happen many times with many bills. But I'm just struck by Section 2. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of curious, you know, of you must have looked at that and said, well, it's constitutional for us to put in statute the legislature can't do something.
Yeah. Chair Hoyle, Representative Holvey. The legislature must follow statutes to the extent it doesn't accept itself, and this is the key to this. There is nothing that in this Section 2 or elsewhere in the bill that does not prevent the legislature from saying, notwithstanding Section 2, you know, this section is included in this bill. So while it is something that will be operative in silence, and that is to say if the legislature doesn't notwithstand it, there is nothing in here that would prohibit the legislature from, in fact, notwithstanding Section 2 if it chose to do so. And that's what makes it constitutional.
And so the follow-up?
Yep.
And so the purpose of Section 2, then, is to give us a warning that we shouldn't do this?
Chair Hoyle, Representative Holvey, it is in part a flag for you to consider, yes.
Thank you. I just told you I was amused by it.
Representative Kenema.
Thank you. Yeah, I guess I share some of these concerns about it's overdue. On the other hand, what is it? And I guess I was taken a little bit by Mr. Wolf's comment, not terribly controversial, and that they would not be terribly controversial. And I guess I would hope that they wouldn't be controversial at all. And within that, I thought it's really an interesting tease out of some very complicated things. For example, the language says wholly preempted by federal law. Well, that would be very fascinating when we start reviewing some of the marijuana statutes, for example, or some of these other interesting items. At what point is it preempted by federal law, and how much of a preemption? And it's just by way of comment rather than, I just think there really is potentially a lot of judgment to be exercised here. And I don't know whether we have time to ferret out whether that judgment was correct. But I think it's overdue.
Representative Hoyle, Representative Kenemer, I hope you'll excuse my lawyerly hedging on the not terribly controversial part. My hope is that they would be uncontroversial, but I have to assume that just about anything we propose, there may be some kind of constituency that may question it. I can't anticipate that won't be the case, but I would certainly hope that, yes, these would be uncontroversial proposals. And I think that also the preemption issue is something where we would want it would have to be a very clear case of preemption before we would propose that it not be it no longer be a part of the revised statutes.
Representative Kama.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one more comment. My first year of service in the legislature was in 87 in the Senate, and I remember one of the first things I received was a copy of the IRS, the ORS, and the IRS, maybe that too, the ORS, and it was remarkably brief compared to its size today, just as a way of comment.
Any other questions or comments from the committee? Okay, is there any other additional testimony on this particular bill? Well, this bill is not ready to move as there's a pending amendment. And with that, I will close the public hearing of House Bill 4133 under announcements. We have no plans to meet this Wednesday or Friday, and we would like to generally limit Friday meetings, as we know that some of you have a long way to go to get back home. So we will try and conduct our business quickly, efficiently, and on Monday and Wednesday when possible. But this week, Wednesday and Friday, you've got some free time. Use it wisely. Plan for next Monday, February 10th at 3 p.m. Yes, Representative Berger.
Madam Chair, I understand the Rules Committee has special rules and timelines, but I'm a little concerned that this is waiting for amendment and may not make it through this session if we don't meet at all this week.
Representative Berger, thank you for the question. We looked at the workload that we have. The amendment that's being presented is a technical fix. It's not a really complex amendment. So I don't anticipate that amendment will make this bill any more complicated or hold it up, and it's our intent that as soon as we come back in Monday to work this bill, if there isn't any issues with the committee. So,
thank you.
And again, we looked at the workload and when people would be ready to bring their bills forward, and we felt like Monday would be sufficient.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And with that, we are adjourned.
Question.